Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory is presented by Felix Savadas Mercedes-Benz of South Charlotte, Charlotte's premier Mercedes-Benz dealer and the Carolinas' number one volume sales leader. Over 300 new and 200 pre-owned vehicles always available. Visit mbcharlotte.com.
As a governor, mayor, businessman, I know the game. Been played by the game. Now we are exposing the game for you.
This is Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory.
You know Bill O'Reilly as a journalist, author, and television and radio host. Bill reported for local television stations and later for CBS News and ABC News. He anchored the television program Inside Edition from 1989 to 1995, and he joined the Fox News Channel in 1996. Bill hosted The O'Reilly Factor, the highest-rated cable news show, for 16 years until 2017. Bill hosted the Radio Factor that had more than 3 million listeners. Bill O'Reilly has authored or co-authored over 24 books, most recently Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. Bill is back and on the radio with the O'Reilly Update every weekday on over 160 stations across the country. Bill O'Reilly, welcome to Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory. One question and one question only. Give me an example of the good, the bad, and the outrageous or funny with politics that you've personally encountered in your long, historic life. Bill, first give me an example of the good in politics
All right, Governor, that you've personally encountered.
I
was behind the scenes working with President Obama on the mentoring, my brother's keeper program. I thought that President Obama got a little distracted, but that was an example to me of how national politics can really help individuals who need help. So just a quick reminder that the Brothers Keeper was to match up, use federal funding to match up very successful Americans with inner city youth on a one-on-one basis. So basically the poor kid in his teens would then have somebody to rely on to bring him through to adulthood. Now, I don't think a political program gets any better than that. So I worked with President Obama on it. I promoted it on my television program. I went to the White House a couple of times, talked to him about it. I had wished it got more traction, because I think that's the best example I can come up with of a positive political situation.
Well, mentoring is personal to me. I started the Mayor's Mentoring Alliance when I was mayor, and I'm still mentoring the children of the kids that I mentored 20 years ago. So it is personal to me. Well, how did the White House, on this personal example, the Obama White House, contact Bill O'Reilly? I mean, you know how Bill O'Reilly and the Obamas wasn't necessarily a great relationship, at least according to President Obama. Did they personally call you and say, hey, Bill O'Reilly, we want you to be a part of this program? Did you call them?
Yes, Valerie Jarrett, the consigliere in the White House, personally called me. I had a pretty good relationship with the president, governor. You may remember I interviewed him three times.
Yeah.
He got annoyed with me because I asked him tough questions like I ask everybody. But I think he respected the fact that I was looking out for the country. That I wasn't an ideologue, that I didn't oppose him because he was a Democrat, because I'm a registered independent. I'm not a party apparatchik. And behind the scenes, you know, I had a lot of good conversations with Barack Obama. So it wasn't as strange as it might seem. And he knew that in order to get this program publicized, a big cannon like the O'Reilly Factor was going to help him. So that's how it came about.
So when Valerie gave you a call, Valerie Jarrett, who really ran the White House during the Obama year, she was the most powerful person in the 8 years of the Obama administration, based on my observation as a mayor and a governor during that time.
No doubt.
So when she called you,
what? I liked Ms. Jarrett because she was responsive to me. So if I had a question or I needed an answer or something like that, I could call her, get her on the phone. She was respectful, and I thought she was a very good conduit I thought she did her job well, but you're absolutely right, Governor. Behind the scenes, and not many Americans know this, Valerie Jarrett wielded an enormous amount of power.
And she was close to Michelle, too, which showed
right,
her power within that White House.
The three of them were locked in.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So when Valerie Jarrett gave you a call, do you think she was expecting cooperation, or maybe was this just kind of an invitation which I know will be rejected?
No. They know me well enough at that point to know that I was a person who believes that retail politics is the answer to most of our problems in the USA, and that I had written books about how I, as a former high school teacher, was encouraging politicians to knock off the rhetoric and get down, as you did when you were mayor, to really solving the problems with your own hands. And so Jarrett knew that. So I think she knew I would be receptive to it. It was very flattering for me to go to the White House and be greeted by the president mm-hmm. and acknowledged as somebody who wants to solve this problem.
Real quick, before we move on to the bad of politics, do you have an example of you mentoring a young kid who, here you, a person of a huge public figure, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I had three kids in the Big Brother program,
mm-hmm.
and I stay with them their whole lives. Still with them.
Great.
They're adults now.
Same thing with
and
me.
And I think I helped them out a lot. I mean, I know I did. They didn't have a father, and at first I was assigned to the oldest girl, but then when I walk in the house, I see these other two kids, looking at me, and I go, okay, everybody's going. We're all going.
Right.
And then I stayed with the three. So I have done it, and I know it works.
What did you learn from them? I know they learned a lot from you. What did you learn from them? What did you take from that interaction?
Well, I'm a person who wants to it's a little complicated. I could tell you, I learned compassion, or I learned
sure.
this, or I learned that. But I want to give your audience a bigger lesson. I believe in the nobility of America. And I believe that the American people are the most generous on earth, and that every single one of us deserves an equal shot to pursue happiness. That's what I believe. That's my core belief. So when I had those three kids and I saw the benefits that I could give them, what I learned was the benefits that they gave me back. By succeeding, by being good people, by being kind to their little playmates, which I emphasized in my time with them. So when I saw that my lessons were really taking root, I mean, that gave me an enormous amount of satisfaction.
Wow. All right. That's a great example of the good in politics. And we learned some about you that most people in public and like you, I don't advertise what I did. This was something that I wanted to do, and I gained a great deal of benefit from it. And I still love the kids that I mentored. I was with one of them last night. In fact, the bad in politics, a personal example of the bad in politics, which just makes you cringe.
The Barney Frank episode, the congressman from Massachusetts mm-hmm. I had known for a long time because I went to school in Boston and worked up there in local news. I never particularly liked Mr. Frank, but he would come on my program and debate issues, and he was feisty, and it was good television.
Mm-hmm.
So if you Google O'Reilly Barney Frank, you're going to come up to an interview that I did with him. Where I called him a liar to his face. And it all had to do with Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Mm-hmm.
After the recession of 2008, where millions of Americans got hurt because of bogus mortgages
mm-hmm.
That were backed by this federal program that Barney Frank oversaw, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I had some questions for the congressman. So we played a clip from him on CNBC where he said, well, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are the greatest things and blah, 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 blah. This was before the recession. And then it turned out that they were poorly run and hurt the country. Well, he denied saying that he said Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were good. I just played the clip. I said, Congressman, I just played a clip of you saying it, and now you're denying what everybody saw on videotape. Oh, no, you always do this. And he tried to attack me, and I let him have it. I really let him have it right between the eyes. Very controversial. Some thought I was disrespectful to the congressman. I'll cop to that. But it was so egregious, and nobody's going to lie to me to my face on my television program. That's not happening. So I would think that was leads the league in bad stuff.
What was the were the ramifications from that, both for you or for Barney?
There were a little bit. I got called in by the authorities at Fox News and told that I was disrespectful, and I said, "Yeah, so what? I'm a wise guy. I mean, I'm not going to be intimidated by anybody. I mean, I've never been intimidated by anybody, including my employer, which hasn't made them very happy." I was disrespectful. He deserved it. And that was my line. They didn't like it, but my ratings were so high that, I mean, it really couldn't do much about it.
What were the ramifications for Barney Frank? Any? Did he ever come back on?
I think Frank actually came back on the air after that. Mm-hmm. It took him a while, but he came back. I think Frank was angry that I called him out. I don't think ramifications politically. I mean, Massachusetts is as left-wing as you get. I mean, he had a district where he could have never shown up and he would have got reelected. It's crazy, but it's true. So I don't think there were any ramifications in a professional way for Mr. Frank, but I think he was really seething in a personal way.
It might have hurt him professionally, though, and because you're right. I mean, the whole program ended up really being a scam in so many areas that...
It was awful. And he was in charge of it.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're going to make a mistake at that level, you got to acknowledge the mistake. And he wouldn't. And that's the bad part of politics.
Yeah, and that was a bipartisan scam for many, many years because I watched that. The so-called affordable housing was the big initiative when I was mayor. And mayors were a part of this scam, too, by the way, of, you know, everyone needs a home. And how that got interpreted is even people who need a home who can't afford it. And we ended up causing more harm than good by pushing that agenda for probably over a decade. So you called it out, and you called it out ironically before the recession hit.
So. It was just after.
Oh, was it?
When everything was tottering.
Yeah.
It had been exposed that these two government programs had contributed to the bogus mortgage craze, as you just pointed out. And that's what the background was, because I was so angry that everybody had to suffer economically because of this scam that I wanted to hold people like Barney Frank accountable.
It was a Ponzi scheme, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt.
The outrageous or funny in politics that you've personally dealt with?
I think Jesse Ventura would do both of those.
Wow, the man who beat Norm Coleman for governor.
Yeah,
one of the great upsets. Norm Coleman was running against Humphrey, and here a championship wrestler comes out and wins on a day where you can register to vote the day you vote, and that was one of the big ramifications of that. Well, what was the funny thing about Jesse Ventura and you?
In the beginning, Ventura was a populist guy who basically made fun of the hacks who had made politics their entire existence. And he was enormously appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some good lines, and he would come on, and he'd shake it up. And I could see why he won, why he captured the imagination of people in Minnesota, with his accent and his, you know, the predator and all of that business, you know. But then, and, you know, so he was entertaining. He looked to me like he was sincere. He wanted to do good things for people. He was funny, irrelevant. He'd say anything. But then he takes this turn into the conspiratorial craziness and becomes an absolute loon. I mean, it was amazing. I don't know him that well. I mean, he isn't like me at all now. In the beginning, he did because he was on the show a lot, and we went back and forth. But then I started to say, wait a minute, Governor, you can't be saying stuff like this. It's irresponsible. You can't back it up, and you got a responsibility to your constituency to be honest and stop this nonsense. And he didn't like that. He wanted to be held accountable. So anyway, people will remember vaguely, was at one time considering a third-party run for president.
Oh, I remember. I remember.
Yeah.
He was making a lot of money there for a while, too.
He had, you know, he basically paved the way for Donald Trump.
I was wondering if there you saw a correlation between Jesse and Donald. Yeah. Was Jesse.
So Trump saw that.
Yeah.
And in my upcoming book, The United States of Trump, I talked to him about that. He saw how guys like Ventura could succeed when they had no political experience, and that lit that fire for the president. So the Ventura thing, to me, was, you know, weird, wacky, and I don't know what the third one is.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Ventura appealed to the working man and spoke their language. The more rural, blue-collar, the people who felt like they were being ignored and looked down upon and spoke against. The guys who could fix your car and the college-educated people like myself who thought we were smarter than they were. We didn't even know how to find the, you know, how to change the oil. I think that's the appeal of both of them.
Well, there's no doubt that Ventura and Trump have a lot in common in their campaign style and who they went after and how they framed the issues to appeal to working Americans. So that was one that I followed back then and then translated into what's happening now.
Have you followed up with him at all since then? What's happened to Ventura?
You know, he's fallen on hard times. I think he's out in California. You know, last time I saw him, he didn't look well. So I don't think life is going great for Jesse at this point.
He had his 15 minutes of fame and then
longer
disappeared.
Longer than that. I mean, when you're the governor of a state, I mean, that's
pretty impressive.
As you know better than anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you can help and hurt people at a remarkable level.
Norm Coleman, I always joke with Norm Coleman, a good friend of him. He lost to a wrestler, and he beat a vice president. I think Norm Coleman's had the most two unique campaigns ever in political history.
And then he lost to Franken.
And then he lost to a comedian.
Who is a devil. Franken, you don't get worse than him.
So isn't that amazing? Norm Coleman from Minnesota lost to a wrestler, beat a vice president in Mondale after the tragic death of their U.S. senator, and then lost to a comedian. I think there's a book there and a movie.
Well, if Norm would tell the truth, you know, if he would tell the truth, there's certainly a book there.
I think it would be. Hey, Bill Riley, we're honored to have you on WBT every day at 11:45, and we're honored to have your radio show. And you know, a lot of people don't know your history with CBS News and your deep reporting, and we love your books also. So it's an honor to have you on my podcast, and thanks for some great stories.
Sure, Governor. I hope to see you soon. Thanks for having me in.
Take care. Bill Riley on the Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory.
Thanks for listening to Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory. To contact the show, email patmcrorieshow@wbt.com. You can hear more from Pat every weekday morning from 8 to 10 on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT or at wbtonradio.com. Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.